You can use WBAR at columbia.edu, or you can, this is probably the better way, WBAR request on the AOL Instant Messenger system, WBAR request. In just a moment, we're going to be speaking to Jason Leopold. He's an investigative reporter who's written for magazines like The Nation, The Wall Street Journal, Dow Jones Newswire, etc. He has a book coming out in December. But before we do that, let me just make sure we can hear him. Jason, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi there. Okay, let's begin with the Haiti situation, because we discussed this on the show last week, and we were kind of uncertain as to how to interpret the situation from reports we got in the American press, which are often not very good. Many times, believe it or not, foreign correspondents don't even speak the language sometimes. So
yeah,
it's very.
Yeah.
So I guess, why don't you help us distill that?
Well, first of all, what people should try to understand is that the statements that are coming out from the Bush administration with regard to the allegations from Aristide that he was, quote unquote, kidnapped and forced to, forcibly removed from his presidency, is something that people should really not dismiss as quote unquote, a conspiracy theory, which is what the Bush administration is trying to put out there. The reason I say that is, if people look at the answers that to certain questions that were posed to Donald Rumsfeld and various others in the administration, which are available online, they'll see that there was not a concrete denial with regard to the way that Aristide was, the way he left. And those questions and answers can be found on the Defense Department's website.
And what
is very interesting about the situation, though, is during the course of my own research on it, just to see how the Bush administration, if in fact this is something that, could have happened, I found a story from back in the day when, I guess you could say when Cheney was working under the first Bush administration, probably even before that. I think when he was in the Senate, and if I'm not mistaken, he was in the Senate, but I'll have to just check my notes on that. However,
he may have been a congressman, I think.
Congressman.
Yeah.
Okay. But basically, this is the interesting thing. Cheney had backed a resolution at the time, which is eerily reminiscent of what happened to Aristide a couple of weeks ago. He backed a resolution about, between 15 and, maybe 20 years ago, which said that the U.S. would support rebels in overthrowing democratically elected leaders of other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And, looking at that back then, the statements that he made, back in the mid-'80s, to what's happened, with regard to Haiti a couple of weeks ago, one's left to believe that, Haiti's fingerprints are all over this.
Right.
In addition, the other statements that Bush, Roger Noriega, who's the Deputy Secretary of State, said that what happened in Haiti is a lesson for leaders of other failed countries. Now that's unbelievable, because here you have Aristide, who is a democratically elected. He was elected democratically. I mean, there was a vote. People voted him in, and sure, this guy may have had enormous problems, and may have been. We don't know the full evidence yet. May have been corrupt, to some extent or another. However, for the Bush administration to take such a hard line stance in basically overthrowing him, a democratically elected leader, has enormous repercussions for countries such as Venezuela and other countries where leaders that we may not necessarily agree with. So it's quite a contradiction from what they're doing in Iraq, where they're saying we want to have a democratic country. And, but if it doesn't go according to the way that the U.S. wants, particularly the Bush administration wants, well, then you better watch out because the Bush administration is going to, you know, get rid of you.
I want to ask about motive, because in Venezuela, we know what the motive is. There's a definite material profit motive to overthrow Chavez or someone like him. But what is the motive in Haiti, do you think?
Well, you know, I think the motive in Haiti, it's kind of hard to tell at this point. But, my feeling is that just from seeing what's going on is how, you know, there's enormous number of Haitian refugees coming over to, U.S. shores. There's problems with, I believe there's some trade problems there and economic aid that we're, supplying to Haiti that may not be going to the people and, maybe used to line other pockets, but, rather line pockets of the leadership there. These are all rumors that are floating around out there. However, one has to look at the Bush administration and just really say that this is a really dangerous administration. And if they do not agree with the way a democratically elected leader from another country, that's not to say like England or Israel, if they do not agree with how you run your government, well, they're going to get rid of you. And I think Haiti is a prime example of that. It's really dangerous. And so I think more research, more time has to go into looking into the situation in Haiti to see really what the motive was. But it's interesting because on Nightline, maybe a day after Aristide reportedly resigned, you have the Deputy Secretary of State being interviewed by Ted Koppel, and he's, for lack of a better phrase, he's bad-mouthing Aristide. Now, what is the point of that? What is the point of, bad-mouthing a democratically elected leader and saying he deserved this? He more or less, by paraphrasing what the Deputy Secretary of State said in this interview, he said that Aristide, did this to himself, and this was deserved. So that leads one to believe that, did the Bush administration support these rebels? Did they provide them with arms? Did they, push them to basically, overthrow Aristide? Now, everyone knows we've had a lengthy problem with Haiti. But if you look at the history of all this, this is the U.S., particularly with Bush and Reagan, and many of the Bush administration officials now who cut their teeth under those previous administrations, this is exactly what went on, with Afghanistan, with Iran, Iraq, Iran-Contra scandal. This just smacks of history repeating itself.
I know there's a lot of debate still among some people. Some people seem to have a settled view on it, but in terms of the attempted and failed coup of Chavez a couple years ago, and then I guess now, we had a guest on last week, and we were talking about whether or not we were speculating on whether or not the connection between the U.S. and this brigade of thugs, I guess, in Haiti, whether the extent of that connection, how direct it is, whether it's more of an indirect connection. What do you think on that? The guest we had on sort of held off on stating that there was a direct connection in terms of monetary support or political support.
It's really, I have to say, it's very difficult to say and to point blank pin the blame or to say without any doubt that, yes, Bush administration had, supported these rebels. But, again, I just go back to the Iran-Contra scandal and just think of all the people that were involved in that who are, a big part of the administration now.
Right.
And you just kind of see the similarities between some of this and the underhandedness in, saying that, yes, we support, democratic leaders, we support Aristide, but then suddenly, you see these rebels, with all this power and these weapons. Well, you got to wonder, how the heck did that happen? you know, and I believe that there's some truth to the fact that they did supply them. They did support them economically.
I want to ask you one question, a related question also, and I think Sal Landau touched upon this in a column that he wrote a couple weeks ago, but I want to talk about image and reality in the popular press, in the American press, how this has been portrayed. You know, one thing you notice is that the quote-unquote rebels, that's how they're referred to, with this very vague term, and it's I've sort of noted that it seems like a caricature. They sort of just portray Aristide as this stubborn playground bully who won't go, and you know, the rebels,
right,
they don't really specify what the very disturbing and reactionary views of these rebels are. Can you talk a little bit more about the press coverage, press treatment of this Haiti and some of the inadequacies?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, well, it's very interesting the way the press treats anything with controversy these days, specifically when it involves the Bush administration. You know, you get this feeling that when you read, say, the Washington Post, maybe the New York Times, and some other you know, well-known publications, that this is a conspiracy theory, that these are the people on the sidelines, these so-called liberals who are anti-patriotic or rather unpatriotic, saying that this was a coup pushed by the Bush administration. So you really get the feeling when you read that it's just the way that it's written, the slant or the angle is that, well, this is just entirely not true, and we're foolish for even thinking that. Whereas in the international press, you get the feeling that there is an air of truth to this, that, hey, we don't know all the facts yet, but here we have somebody, the president of another country, who, may have a bit of a credibility problem, but is out there saying, I was, forcibly removed. Now, why wouldn't we take that person's word for it, or at least, look into it further? And I'll give the press here some credit for the fact that they've actually even reported it, because that was actually something that was shocking to me. I didn't even think that's a story that they would have reported. But it's not a story that's being delved into enough. I mean, I think that what we need is somebody out there that can seriously investigate, that can get out there, and fly out to wherever, need be, or even go to Washington and find out exactly what happened. I think that the press here is basically just, attending press conferences, writing down whatever Colin Powell says, and, writing a story based off of public statements. And that really doesn't do anybody any good, because when you have somebody else from another country saying, hey, I was removed by gunpoint, that's the responsibility of the press is to investigate that, whether it's true or not, but to investigate it and to say, hey, this happened or it didn't happen, not to just, gloss it over with, oh, this is a conspiracy theory, our government would never do something like that. That's absolutely not true. I mean, we've seen, history has shown that, yes, we have, our government has done things like that, has done, things that were underhanded. And I think the press is, I give them credit for actually reporting it, but I give them an F for not following up on it and not looking or not digging deep enough. And that just, basically goes to, I think that just is an example of how the press covered Iraq. Here they are suddenly now covering, the fact that there was no weapons of mass destruction. However, prior to the war, everybody was saying, was basically towing the line of the Bush administration.
Turning to a different story away from Haiti, but that I think is still reflective of some of these media deficiencies, you have a big story that you're working on regarding Pakistan and Dick Cheney. Now, I have to confess, and I told this earlier, that this is not my particular, field, I don't know as much about the politics in this particular area as I should.
Right.
So I'm going to ask you to guide us through it. I don't think most listeners do either about Pakistan. So if you could guide us through what you found, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, the story actually was just published on a couple of websites, and it'll be in some international publications, down in London. And some other ones I don't even know yet. But basically what it comes down to is this. Yesterday the UN issued a report or a statement saying that Pakistani government was aware that A.Q. Khan, now I'm abbreviating his first and middle name, the head of or the father of the country's nuclear program, that the government was well aware that he was selling nuclear technology and equipment on the black market. Now, when this came out a month ago, when the extent of his sales of nuclear technology and equipment to rogue nations such as Iran, North Korea, Libya, maybe Syria came out, the Bush administration reacted with shock. Now, to put it into context, you know, one needs to realize that Bush is out there, you know, talking tough on countries. You know, everyone remembers you're either with us or against us. You know, his famous line after September 11th.
Right.
And basically saying that, you know, if you support terrorists, we're coming after you. And, you know, that was part of the reason that the Bush administration said that we invaded Iraq. They've got weapons of mass destruction. They're supplying Al-Qaeda, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here we have the situation in Pakistan. You know, it was Pakistan all along that had these weapons of mass destruction. But Pakistan is an ally. But what's really more important than that is the fact that the way the Bush administration reacted when news hit, was discovered that Pakistan was supplying these rogue nations with nuclear equipment and technology for 15 years. Now, what's interesting about this is that this shouldn't have been a surprise. And in fact, you know, I believe that without any doubt that of course Pakistan's government knew about it, and so did the Bush administration. In fact, I believe this is a major cover-up. Because back in 1989, a young intelligence analyst prepared a report for Dick Cheney. And again, this is information that is publicly available. These aren't any secret documents that I, had collected. But a young intelligence analyst named Richard Barlow prepared a report for Dick Cheney in 1989, the year that Khan had started to sell these nuclear equipment and technology to rogue nations, saying that this report prepared for Cheney said that, look, you know, Pakistan has the bomb, and in addition to that, they're selling equipment to outlaw regimes. Cheney's response was to dismiss this report, and the reason that this report was dismissed is because the findings was politically inconvenient. Now, Cheney, back in 1989, was Secretary of Defense. He had Rumsfeld's job under the first Bush administration. So Cheney dismissed that, and part of the reason he dismissed that is that a finding that Pakistan, you know, possessed a nuclear bomb would have triggered a congressionally mandated cutoff of aid to the country, you know, which was a key ally in the CIA's efforts to support Afghan rebels, you know, fighting the pro-Soviet government.
Right.
In addition, it also would have killed a $1.4 billion sale of F-16 fighter jets to Islamabad. And that is something that Cheney, that the Pentagon, and the Bush administration, the first Bush administration, desperately wanted. So the ironic thing between the way we're responding to Pakistan today, okay, with regard, we basically gave Pakistan a slap on the wrist. A slap on the wrist today, when we found out the extent of their sales of, nuclear technology. You know, we could have, and normally we should have, slapped some sanctions on them and cut off some aid. But it's very important before the November election, as everybody knows, that the Bush administration finds Osama bin Laden. And where do they want to look? Well, they want to use the borders of Pakistan, which Musharraf, you know, who's the current president, has said no to. Now, in exchange for a, you know, so-called slap on the wrist, you know, the Bush administration is able to go there. So when Bush says that, he's going to, take action against rogue countries, rogue nations that, harbor weapons of mass destruction and, supply terrorists with the means to build them, well, that depends on what you mean by rogue. You know, it depends on how convenient or it is for the Bush administration to do that. And what's really important is that Cheney really covered this up. How could the Bush administration come out now, act surprised, and lie to the public and say, you know, we can't believe this is happening, which again, I'm just paraphrasing most of the responses, instead of saying, we have known this for 15 years. Cheney was Secretary of Defense when this was happening. A report was prepared showing us the extent of Pakistan's nuclear capabilities, and we, you know, just shoved it aside, turned the other cheek, and that's exactly what's happening now.
Is Richard Barlow speaking out about this, or is he?
He has. Yeah, Richard Barlow, by the way, when he prepared this report back in '89, he was considered, I guess you could say, afterward, a whistleblower, because what happened was is that Cheney instructed some of the people who were going to testify before Congress, and again, this is available publicly. In fact, people can, they do a LexisNexis search, do a little bit of extensive search on the internet, they'll find that there was testimony before Congress by various members of Cheney's colleagues in the Pentagon who reportedly lied to Congress about the extent of their of Pakistan's nuclear capabilities, literally flat-out lied. When Barlow protested about this to his superiors, he was fired. Mm-hmm. When he said that he was going to blow the whistle on it in Congress, they smeared him terribly, terribly. And nobody really ever, you know, found out how serious this was. Now, Barlow has spoken out. What's really interesting, by the way, about how serious their nuclear capabilities were 15 years ago, which, again, Cheney knew about it. I must emphasize that because this is a guy who, you know, was running for re-election along with Bush. Richard Kerr, who is the currently leading the investigation into the CIA's pre-war intelligence in Iraq, was at the time in 1989 the deputy director of the CIA. And in an interview with Seymour Hersh, an investigative reporter for The New Yorker, Richard Kerr said that the nuclear situation in Pakistan was the most dangerous that he's ever seen. In fact, he said, it may be as close as we've come to a nuclear exchange, because they were taught that they may, you know, launch an atomic bomb, you know, against India.
Right.
Quote, it was far more frightening than the Cuban Missile Crisis. But still, in 1989, Cheney and others in the Pentagon continued to hide the reality of Pakistan's nuclear threat from members of Congress. And basically, Hersh said in his New Yorker article, which came out in 1993, that the reasons behind the cover-up, quote, revolved around the fact that the Reagan administration and the Bush administration had dramatically aided Pakistan in pursuit of the bomb. So people should look or should, you know, listen to what Cheney says and the Bush administration says regarding currently what's going on in Pakistan, you know, with, they should look at it with a magnifying glass, because
right,
there are some serious lies and misstatements in that.
I want to finally turn to the book that you have coming out, and we'll use the book as sort of a springboard. The book is coming out, I believe, in December. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have a title?
That's correct, yes.
Does it have a title yet, or is that down the line?
You know, the working title right now is Fade to Black.
Okay.
And basically, what the book covers is my time and experience covering the California energy crisis and the Enron bankruptcy. And I spent 2 years doing that. When I was covering it, well, specifically Enron, I had gotten very close to basically linking a member of the Bush administration, specifically Thomas White, Secretary of the Army, who was, you know, that's part of the Pentagon, Department of Defense. I basically linked him to the losses that he concealed. I tied him to massive losses that were going on at Enron. In fact, I had, you know, uncovered many documents and I wrote a scathing story, which should have resulted in either his resignation or firing. And normally that would, you know, things like that would happen just if you look in back in history as, you know, who our leaders are and when they're tied to, you know, major scandals. Or at least it should have resulted in a, you know, SEC investigation. Well, what happened was that I was smeared. I was turned into the story. And I was basically, my credibility and veracity as a reporter was challenged. And so I'm more or less showing people exactly what went on behind the scenes and what really happened in the California energy crisis and Enron. And, you know, I think that it's really going to blow the lid off things that people, you know, seem to think they know. In addition to that, what's very interesting is that nobody, to this day, nobody has ever followed up on my Thomas White story. However, and again, my story basically said that the division that Thomas White ran at Enron, which was Enron Energy Services, that he was involved in massive losses. He was involved in hiding massive losses in that division. He testified before Congress about that, and he said that's not true. About a month ago, last month when Jeff Skilling was indicted, the indictment, if people want to read that on the Internet, and this is pretty amazing, the indictment actually confirms every single element of my story. Basically says Jeff Skilling and other, quote, senior managers and executives at Enron Energy Services hid massive losses, made the division look like it was a profitable one when in fact it was a house of cards. Right. And that's exactly, you know, what I had written in my story nearly 2 years ago, one in which that I was smeared for.
I know, I know you've since been, as you just said, the credibility of your story has since been, I guess, vindicated. But I understand there's also another story that you are working on somewhat related to this, more recent. I'm not sure if you can talk about it now. If you can't, that's fine.
I can. Actually, this is very, I can talk about it a little bit because I haven't reported it yet.
Yeah.
But basically what it is the FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and California have been battling each other for, I would say, a good 4 years now, almost 4 years, with regard to the massive overcharges and, the rip-off of California ratepayers with regard to the electricity crisis, ripping off consumers, rather. Well, it looks like that this is a case that Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's our current governor, is going to quietly settle. California is going to barely see any refunds. They were going after $9 billion, and I've got some strong information that, in fact, everyone's going to be kind of let off. Could just go away quietly, and they're not going to, in a nutshell, they're not going to have to pay anything. Now, this is a major, major blow to California because the overcharges, which seriously were in the billions of dollars, really kind of contributed also to a deficit in the state, and that was because the state had to dip into its general fund, to pay for electricity to keep the lights on. Now we just passed this proposition here where, you know, we're going to borrow $15 billion, to close, a black hole. Now, paying that back is going to, wind up, my kids, and I don't even have any, are going to wind up having to pay that back down the years.
Right.
But, the government not forcing these companies to pay us back, we're really stuck here. And major criminal activity, has been, let off. People have been let off the hook. And if you think about it, here we have, somebody like Martha Stewart, who, in my personal opinion, I do believe, lied, but this is a woman that was prosecuted for, doing some underhanded work in the stock market. And it's the same exact thing with these, with these energy companies. And they're just, being let off the hook.
Jason, I want to thank you for coming on. I'm sure we'll talk about the energy story much more as the publication date for your book approaches, and as you work on more stories, I hope you'll return. Thank
Absolutely.
Listeners can find your work on Counterpunch and numerous other publications. I guess one of the ways is just to go to Counterpunch. I see you there pretty regularly.
Right.